Welcome to Local Talk Friday on KHOI Community Radio, where we explore people, stories, events, and places in central Iowa. Thank you for listening. I am Pat Schlarbaum, your host for the hour, with engineer Mike Murphy, our steady hand at the controls, and co-host Mike Metz is here, keeper of the Prairie Winds Farm.
Good morning, Pat.
How are you today, Mike?
I'm doing well. You know, yesterday we had that rime ice on all the plants, made it look really nice, but now our rain has washed it away.
Appreciating the moisture, that's for sure.
Yeah.
Hey, there's lots to learn about on this local talk for Friday, December 9th, 2022, and it is Human Rights Month. Human Rights Day is observed every year on December 10th, the day the United Nations General Assembly adopted the Universal Declaration of Human Rights in 1948.
Well, currently, it's 33 degrees out there with a high temperature forecast today of 39 and a low tonight of 31. The winds will be out of the east at about 10 to 20 miles per hour. Rain with possible snow flurries will continue through the day and into tomorrow with the highs in the 40s over the weekend, so it's not too bad. Colder later next week and a snowstorm is forecast for next Thursday. Our sunrise will be at 7:31 a.m. and sunset this evening at 4:42 p.m. with a big waning moon.
Waning moon. Later in the hour, we'll hear from Perry Little, one of the riders in a memorial horseback ride in South Dakota and Minnesota. He is a Yankton man. Let's hear from Dennis Hart with a news summary of the week from the pages of the Ames Tribune.
The end of the line for Iowa's first-in-the-nation Democratic Party caucuses. The Boone County Sheriff resigns. And why that canine in the sheriff's office in Boone County died. All part of what made news in the Ames Tribune this past week. Let's begin with last Friday's paper, which reported that the Boone County Sheriff had announced his resignation. Greg Ellsbury's last day in office will be December 31st. He still has 2 years left in his term, and he gave no reason for his early resignation. The Boone County Board of Supervisors now must decide how to choose his successor. Under state law, county supervisors can either appoint to fill the vacancy or hold a special election. It must make an appointment within 40 days, and if it does not make that appointment before Ellsbury leaves, the Sheriff's Department's chief deputy would step up. The supervisors met in closed session on November 29th with three candidates to finish Ellsbury's term. They are all deputies in the county sheriff's office. A public hearing will be held on December 14th to appoint a sheriff. The Trib also reported that Tyson Foods supervisors who had been fired in a coronavirus betting pool scandal at the company's Waterloo pork plant have sued the company, saying they're still owed incentive payments. In the lawsuit, five managers argued that Tyson needs to make extra performance payments after the plant hit certain production targets 2 years ago. The company had revoked the payments after suspending, and then firing, the managers for betting on how many employees would test positive for the coronavirus in the first months of the pandemic. The group is demanding a total of nearly $300,000 in unpaid incentives. And the Trib reported that people who live and work in downtown Des Moines have been complaining for years about foul smells coming from nearby meatpacking and rendering plants. And for just as long, the city has tried to get those odors under control with little success. Now, Des Moines wants to try something new. It's looking to establish a system for monitoring and easing odor problems by training its employees on odor science, yes, odor science, by purchasing scentometers for tracking bad smells, and by putting into place an odor threshold that prompts businesses to take action if smells reach a certain level. All this would be part of a new ordinance that could be approved by the City Council next year. Stay tuned. Saturday's Trib brought word that President Biden had signed into law a bill to avert a freight rail strike that he said could have plunged the United States into a recession. The measure had been approved by the U.S. House and Senate, and all of Iowa's congressional members had voted for it. It binds rail companies and workers to a proposed settlement that was reached between the railroads and union leaders in September, but which was rejected by some of the union workers. Saturday's paper also reported that federal officials will monitor Iowa's controversial Glenwood Resource Center over the next 3 years, as the state works to move residents to new homes with adequate support and supervision. Iowa officials reached a settlement with the U.S. Department of Justice as part of a federal investigation into Glenwood, a troubled institution for people with severe disabilities that is scheduled to close in the next 2 years. DOJ officials had found the state violated residents' constitutional rights by denying them sufficient medical care and exposing them to unethical experimentation. The Trib also reported that an Iowa State University program that socially connects international and domestic students will make a comeback in spring. The Cultural Ambassador Program had started in 2003, but has not been promoted for a few years because of the coronavirus pandemic. The International Students and Scholars Office helps international students maintain their immigration status, navigate U.S. employment, and receive social, cultural, financial, and personal support. And the Trib reported that in the wake of the Iowa State University football team's bad season, with 4 wins and 8 losses in last place in the Big 12 Conference, offensive coordinator Tom Manning and team strength coach Dave Andrews are out. Sunday's paper reported that the Democratic Party's Rules and Bylaws Committee had voted to make a seismic shift in the way the United States chooses its leaders, and that will leave the Democratic Party's caucuses in Iowa, which have traditionally gone first in the presidential nominating process, out in the cold. The committee decided that South Carolina, a state with a substantial black population that helped deliver the presidential nomination to Joe Biden, will lead a new early voting window that will be more diverse than in years past. Under the new plan, which the full DNC must approve early next year, South Carolina will go first, and then Nevada and New Hampshire will share a second primary date. Georgia and then Michigan would round out the early voting before Super Tuesday. Those states must prove to the committee they are able to change the dates of their primary. The Trib also reported that one of Iowa's biggest special needs child care providers is doubling the size of its campuses in Ames and in Coralville. ChildServe in Ames is adding 20,000 square feet to its current 21,000 square foot facility on Philadelphia Street. Leaders say that will double the number of children served to 1,800. It's expected to open next year. And a ChildServe facility in Coralville is adding 13,000 square feet to its existing 12,000 square foot building, a project designed to be finished by 2024. The 94-year-old nonprofit offers specialty services to children, teens, and young adults up to age 21. Staff help identify the unique needs of young patients who have developmental delays, disabilities, and injuries. 4 key areas of need are provided: autism services, pediatric rehabilitation, complex medical care, and community-based services. And the Trib had word that people from Iowa State University and Ames had come together to stitch a quilt with a message of support for Iranians who are protesting against their government. The quilt features the faces of protesters who have died, along with the words woman, life, freedom in both English and Persian. The quilt will be displayed in ISU's College of Design before the end of this semester and into the spring. Tuesday's Trib reported the inside story of how the Democratic Party's Rules and Bylaws Committee came to decide that Iowa's Democrats should lose their first-in-the-nation caucus status. It reported how President Biden had told South Carolina Democratic Congressman Jim Clyburn, who'd helped Biden win South Carolina's primary in 2020, that he, Biden, wanted South Carolina to move to the front of the party's presidential nominating calendar. Tuesday's paper also reported on a new artifact exhibit in Polk County that tells the story of indigenous people. It's an exhibit at the Jester Park Nature Center in Granger. It shows a glimpse of Polk County's history, dating as far back as 10,000 years ago. The exhibit is open year-round every day of the week, except holidays. And the Trib reported that Iowa State University's football team had a new offensive coordinator. He is Nate Shielhouse, who was already on staff there. He will replace Tom Manning, who was let go as offensive coordinator days earlier. This after the football team finished the season with a 4-win, 8-loss record. Wednesday's Trib reported that a canine officer with the Boone County Sheriff's Office had died in September after he was left in his handler's patrol vehicle for nearly 24 hours. Court documents revealed that the canine, named Bear, was found dead in Sergeant Dallas Wingate's truck after being left in it from about 10 p.m. September 1st to 8 p.m. September 2nd. The high temperature on September 2nd was 89 degrees, and a state of Iowa climatologist said the temperature inside a vehicle that day would have risen to between 130 and 135 degrees. Wingate resigned from the sheriff's office September 8th. Boone County Sheriff Greg Ellsbury has also resigned, effective the end of this year. There was also a report that a surge in respiratory illnesses and a rush of patients had prompted Unity Point Health to implement a new scheduling process for its urgent care and express care locations in central Iowa. That requires all patients to reserve a time online rather than walk in for care. In recent weeks, Unity Point has seen as much as a 40% increase in patient volume compared to what providers would typically see. It's been driven by high infection rates of respiratory illnesses, including the flu, the coronavirus, and RSV. And there was word that Ames High School students' portraits of children from Ukraine are hanging in the library on Douglas Avenue until December 20th. Those portraits will be delivered to Ukrainian children in January. For 6 years, Ames students have created portraits to boost the spirit of children around the world. This year, in the wake of the Russian invasion of Ukraine, they wanted to focus on children in Ukraine. The portraits are of Ukrainian children who are now living in Poland as refugees. They range in age from 1 to 18 years old. Yesterday's paper reported that a former high school teacher in Marshalltown would plead guilty to charges of sexually exploiting a student. 27-year-old Mark Esquivel was a high school physical education teacher and coach when he was charged and arrested in June of last year. He resigned rather than be fired. And the Trib reported that Moxie Solar, a solar panel installing company based in North Liberty, had shut down. The company had once bragged of serving 27 states and had planned to build a $10 million manufacturing plant. But economic struggles and dozens of lawsuits and consumer complaints filed against it brought it down. The coronavirus, supply chain problems, and inflation had all caused money problems for Moxie Solar. The company was not able to complete numerous solar projects, and that had prompted multiple lawsuits against it. And that is your summary of the week's news from the Ames Tribune. I'm Dennis Hart, taking off for the weekend now, but planning to return right here to Local Talk on Monday morning at 7, when I'll not only have news from all around Iowa, but I'll be hosting the program as well. My guests will be Ames Mayor John Hala, Paul Wearson, and Maggie Westfold, and it's going to be a great show. I hope you'll be able to join us. Until then, let's both go ahead and have a safe, happy, and healthy weekend.
Can you see the lightning in the distance as it dances its way across the sky?
Summary of the week's news in the Ames Tribune, and the music you heard was Thunder by Spirit Cry. Can you hear the voices of the children calling out to you from above? On the day after Christmas, December 26, 1862, 38 Dakota Nation men were hung at Mankato, Minnesota, under the direction of President Abraham Lincoln. The convictions and hangings of the Dakota 38 resulted from the aftermath of the U.S.-Dakota War of 1862 in southwest Minnesota. In addition to the 38 men hanged, There were terrible injustices committed against 265 others in the form of military convictions and more than 3,000 Dakota people who were held captive, then were forced to march west. Here's a Native man's story about a trail ride to commemorate the 38+2 Dakota men that were hung in 1862. The 278-mile trail ride starts today and ends December 26th. Perry Little, tribal historian for the Ahuntawan Nation.
I don't know if you want to call me that. Perry from, you know, from here. Robin Man, you know.
Okay. What does the date December 26th, 1862 mean to you?
That's not a good day in our times. In history, for some, they celebrate worldly, you know. Here we remember things, not worldly, but right here, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it brings to me, is the beginning of the ending of the beginning again, if you can understand that.
Well, let's flesh that out. What was the beginning of the end?
I believe it's like the beginning of the end of our nation as we once were, peacefully, and then we had to convert into war, you know, to survive, and one thing led to another. History was never told the right way, and the atrocities of everything that had taken place, you know, and then that's just one day.
Let's examine what should be remembered. There was 38 Dakota men that were hung in Mankato. It was a result, apparently there was a war, a U.S. war against the Dakota people of 1862, and they were convicted, and President Abraham Lincoln went ahead with the verdict of hanging. And then those 38 individuals had families. What came next?
2 years later, they drug two more back from Canada, hung them. It was 40. It was 300 and some, actually, they wanted to hang that day. So after the men were, you know, shipped out Fort Snelling, up and out of the way for the soldiers to have their way with what I say is with our women and our children and our elders and, you know, lawlessness, all that went on as our men are, I just imagine how they were feeling in there. You know, your wife, your family, your sister, your kid, your daughter is out there beating who knows what, you know, happening. And you're prison for nothing to try to survive in this world peacefully.
And I think I read of a, somewhat of a famous quote that the settlers in Minnesota, when we're confronted with the conditions of the Native indigenous people, the quote was, "Let them eat grass."
Yeah, and that was, I believe, Sibley.
Then I read about an exile. I don't know who made that word, how indigenous people could be made as exiles, but what can you share about that dark episode of atrocities?
That goes along with the 38, but it was like the ones, well, they call them the exile, we call it. We do a different ride from Santee, Nebraska, coming up that way, and it's just to remember you were pushed away from your home to a land you've never known before, and I don't know if that's what exile to me is, I guess. I mean, to me, it's kind of like that. It's hard to understand for me what exile means, really. because there was never nowhere for it, I guess. It was never taught or nothing.
So there was a forcible removal of Native people from Minnesota. And were riverboats involved down the Mississippi and up the Missouri?
Yes. They were packed from overcapacity and came down from Fort Snelling up that way to the Missouri on up through South Dakota. And the Hanktuan area would be the first one you would meet. The end of the village is that's what we stand for. You know, we protect that east gate. And the ships were coming that way to Greenwood, and there was nowhere for them to dock. So they ventured on up farther up past Platte, Chamberlain, and then they come to Fort Townsend, where they were able to dock and unload the women and children, whatever people that have been survivors of the exiled ones, I guess. And that's where they remained to live their lives out. And then on that trip to Fort Thompson up the river, over 300 children, you know, died in there on this ship because of no starvation, malnutrition, just everything you could imagine bad they can do. Happened, you know, moms were carrying babies 2 or 3 days on their arms because there's nowhere to have a proper burial, and they wouldn't do anything about it, you know. Hmm. And then some of the moms would even just jump in with their babies, you know, just to be with them.
Yeah, what a pitiful journey that must have.
Yeah, no,
must have been.
That's what we said, you know, me and my brothers, we talk about them things. Like, we just think of it as a lifeline, you know, water and life. And in actuality, it's a graveyard for many,
mm-hmm.
all along the river.
Mm-hmm. Well, you're organizing once again for a ride in commemoration of this atrocity upon your people. And it is, you're going to be leaving from Fort Thompson?
No, they leave on the 38 from Lower Brule, South Dakota, which is across the Missouri on the west bank. And they'll ride across, and then they'll be in Fort Thompson that same day. And they'll leave from there up the highway towards Woonsocket, Weston Springs, take that trail, which the soldiers marched them this way, too. There was a lot of them that marched from Minnesota, had walked from there to the fort, and along that journey, many died, you know. And again, no proper burial, no, just leave them, you know, the Indian side, whatever. So, you know, and then when you do these rides, you know, like the 38, when I did that many years ago in certain areas, you know, I would keep it to myself, but I would feel things, you know. Something bad happened. I could feel someone's emotion. I could feel who was hurting. And then it goes on, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So that's another part of this story, true story that taking place. So yeah, there's things out there that were people don't understand, but you know, you got to leave them things alone too. You don't want to be messing around too much with that stuff.
With the burial,
with our relatives that are here and there, and I know I've prior to, you know, becoming a councilman, I was the tribal historic preservation director, and then I brought up some facts that actually they were using human ribs. They carved them into combs up there in Wessington, Woonsocket, and they would sell them to tourists. comb your hair, man, with a human rib, Native American rib bone, you know. Mm-hmm. Then things need to go back to, if you, I doubt if they'd ever go back to who they came from, you know, but they would have to go back to be right. Otherwise, the balance there ain't ever going to be right with whoever that is.
Well, Perry, this is quite a story. What do you think about when you're on the ride, and how are you? How does the ride affect you, and how many days is the ride?
16 days. From, you know, the last day we ride is the day after Christmas when they hung them at 10 o'clock. We arrive at the exact spot, exact time, so it's different. The emotions are different every year because I think I feel different people's emotions every time. It's never the same. And, yeah, we leave and we try to stay as close to the way they would have been treated or mistreated, or because we stay in teepees, you know, in these blizzards and whatever it may be, to suffer like they did. But, hey, we can jump in a car, too, and warm up, you know,
well,
which ain't right, but... kids do, I do, we do, because sometimes it's just unbearably cold out there.
Well, Perry Little, this is quite a commemoration. It's a memorial ride. For any listeners that want to learn more, is there, how can I direct their best interest to?
P.Little. 13 at Gmail. Otherwise, hit me up on Facebook. We'd love to have the more members to join our societies to get these word stories, reminders, facts out to the people. It don't have to be on history either. We do rides for everything from cancer to diabetes to meth to
modern day issues also, yes.
Yeah, we do modern day, but the main thing is to get the truth out.
If
a little bit of the truth.
Absolutely. The truth will not hurt you. Can I Google?
Look under Jimmy Hallum, my dad.
Okay, Jimmy.
H-A-L-L-U-M.
Yes, okay. Well, I'll have that for the listeners. And
yes.
We'll be thinking about you.
Lower Brule, South Dakota.
Yeah, Lower Brule.
Friday night, they'll be,
Friday night.
I believe, they'll be, they'll be there. There'll be a sweat up on top of by the BIA, and then in the morning, I believe around 9, Indian time, 10, you know, they'll circle up, load the pipe, and then they'll leave for Fort Thompson, which is just, you know, across the river. I encourage anybody who wants to help come along, you know, promote, help drive, donate time, ride. If you got a horse, bring a horse, you know, just to help us remember relatives along these trails that are still here, but the memories are not gone yet.
Well, Perry Little, very humbled, and thank you for honoring our airwaves.
Thank you.
And
for having me.
Toksha.
Toksha.
Oh, Toksha. Oh, sure.
I was told it's Toksha. Okay.
Toksha.
So,
thank you.
Toksha. Okay.
Okay.
Is the correct way.
Thank you. The correct
way. And that means we'll see you later. Never say goodbye.
Okay. Toksha. Aki.
Yep.
Thank you, my friend. Thank you. Thank you. Thank
you. And I want to thank everybody for your time.
Thank you.
And also, you guys, pray for the horses. They're the ones who do all the work.
Okay. Perry Little, have a safe ride.
Oh, yes, we do. We will. And we pray hard for that safeness, so it comes to us, and we respect it.
Okay.
So they take care of us.
Okay.
Okay.
Toksa. Toksa.
All right.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Perry Little, Tribal Preservation Director for the Ihonktewan Nation, or the Yankton Sioux people of the East. It's 7:31, and you're listening to KHOI Community Radio on 89.1 FM, and I'm Pat Schlarbaum. On Friday Local Talk with co-host Mike Metz and engineer Mike Murphy. Hi, Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director for the City of Ames and Iowa State University.
Oh, Pat, it's always a pleasure to join all of you and talk sustainability. What a great day that this Friday is starting out to be.
Yes, it is. And I appreciate the moisture. I hope you're liking it, too.
Oh, yes, absolutely. Honestly, we could get a similar rain at similar temperatures for 3 or 4 days, in my opinion.
We don't have to shovel it.
Exactly. Well, Pat, it is getting around that time of the year again when, as the City of Ames, we do our annual recognition luncheon related to the Smart Business Challenge that we've had now for a few years here in our community. And I am so pleased to be able to bring this year's intern team, not only doing great work within the Smart Business Challenge, but also some great work within electric services for the city. And so I'm welcoming Shelby Neckash and also Grant Bresch this morning.
Yeah. Hi, Shelby.
Shelby.
Hi,
Grant.
Hi, guys.
Hi, you guys. It's nice to be here and talk with everyone, try to get the word out about our program.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I wanted to start with the both of you because I always think it's interesting for our listeners, and it always is exciting for me just to highlight the wonderful talent and such diverse backgrounds that our interns bring every year to our program. And so, Shelby and Grant, let's start off. We know your names now, but how about your hometowns, your major and your year at Iowa State, and then why you were interested in joining the energy services team, getting involved in things like the Smart Business Challenge. So, Grant, why don't we start with you?
Yeah, totally. So, my name is Grant Bresch, as Mary said. I am from Waukee, Iowa, and I am a junior majoring in global resource systems and environmental studies. And I wanted to work with the Smart Energy Department for the city just to kind of get some new experience and some new work with individuals who are kind of producing these new and kind of innovative, sustainable ideas and initiatives related to energy generation. So, yeah.
Thank you, Grant. Shelby, how about you?
Hi, everyone. As Mary said, I'm Shelby Neckash. I'm from Spring Green, Wisconsin, and I'm also a junior, but in agricultural studies. And I joined this team because I was really looking forward to an opportunity to work with the public and how to better educate them and make them aware of programs like the Smart Energy Challenge and Smart Business Challenge that exist to help teach them more about sustainability and what they can do.
So, Pat, as you can see, we've got some really enthusiastic, passionate team members on our team. And I'm so glad that Grant mentioned smart energy because really the collectiveness of their roles and the individuals and teams that they work with really is focused on being as cognizant about how we can be eco-smart with our energy resources. Mm-hmm. And to that end, then, a few years ago, I guess it was right after the sesquicentennial, we decided to start a program in the community called the Smart Business Challenge. And I know we've talked a few times actually, on Local Talk about this program, but I think that every year it's helpful to remind listeners about the program and what its focus is. And Shelby, do you want to start related to the challenge?
Yeah, sure thing. The Smart Business Challenge is a program where local businesses are encouraged to join where we help them become more environmentally, economically, and socially sustainable. And we do this through recognizing what they have already done and encouraging ways they can grow in categories such as water conservation, waste reduction, working with their community, and improving relations with customers. And we also have a couple different levels in this. It's green for just joining the program. And based on the amount of these categories that you meet, you can be either bronze, silver, gold, or silver certified.
I think that's a great update, Shelby. And I would mention to listeners that KHOI is a proud member of the Smart Business Challenge. So we are so excited to have them on board. And I think another important piece to mention about the challenge is it's really set up so that, first of all, we're celebrating what our businesses and organizations are doing within our community related to sustainability, because every single one of you listening that is involved with an organization or a business, you are doing something. Your commitment is vivid, and we want to be able to celebrate that. And then, as Shelby noted, certainly make those connections to resources and new ideas and new opportunities. And we definitely, I know Shelby and Grant will hint to this a little bit, but we definitely have some exciting things coming up in the future within this area.
Well, and I want to celebrate the fact that you're bringing on a new generation of younger folks, younger professional experiences to embrace these climate change concepts that are reality. And when you bring on the younger voices, I think it brings on something of real value. Thank you.
Yeah, Pat, I couldn't agree more. And you are exactly right. There are so many challenges that we are facing right now. And yet it's so refreshing to have these bursts of energy through student perspectives, student experiences, and really the vision that students have, you know, for the future, and that they really want to see our generation that's up and coming as our new leaders. Mm-hmm. And so as we look at the challenge recognition event then, Grant, can you give listeners the need to know information to save the date and also then to look at RSVPing to join us?
Yeah, sure. We have been going pretty into the planning stages of our Smart Business Luncheon. So the date that we'll be holding this is on Thursday, January 19th of next year. And we will likely be sending out those RSVP emails sometime within the next couple days to all of our businesses. The luncheon will be at Raymond Gardens from around 11 a.m. to 1:15. And we'll have a few different speakers throughout that time. Both Mary and me and Shelby will be speaking, as long as some of our keynote speakers who are, we will not reveal just yet, but are from the Electric Services Department and some other departments around the city who will be talking about different energy programs as well as the Climate Action Program too. Mm-hmm.
I recall during the COVID era when the luncheon, you would still follow through with delivering lunches. And so this is a pretty big cornerstone of the outreach that the Smart Business Challenge can provide people in Ames, and looking forward to January 19th.
Yes, that is such a reminder, Pat, that the last 2 years we've been remote and we've been delivering lunches and we've been all joining on Zoom, and we're excited to be back together. That was a comment that we heard from a lot of the individuals that had participated in saying it was great to still connect, but there's nothing quite like sitting around a table and being able to have conversation and share ideas. So we're excited to be able to do that again. And just to give a little bit more information, the speakers that we will be having join us, and particularly in sort of that keynote lecture fashion, will be talking a lot about our climate action plan. Of course, we are in the stages of putting together the implementation pieces. And it is a community plan. We've talked a lot about this, which involves our businesses, our organizations, as well as residents, and, of course, municipality. And so to that regard, we're going to be talking a lot about the planning, different projects, and different ideas that are being explored right now that allow our business community to be informed, engaged, and empowered in this process. And so I think this will be a really great opportunity. And not only are we inviting our current Smart Business Challenge participants, but any business that might be interested, any nonprofit organizations, we have those that are also part of the challenge. And so this is open to any business organization interested in the challenge, interested in the things that we do, excited about being able to have the opportunity to do some partnering and collaboration and networking.
The luncheon is just a great opportunity for that networking. It's so essential in this empowerment. I mean, we're trying to change the needle here of our carbon footprint. And you only have so many opportunities to do that. So this is like a meeting, but it's a pleasant gathering with inspirational speakers. It's just, I can't think of a better forum, if you will, come January 19th.
Well, we agree with that, Pat. And we try each year to take that feedback, make the event even more effective and more beneficial. And we absolutely look forward to that gathering. So I would say to stay connected to City of Ames website, social media platforms. We'll be putting more information out related to this event coming up. But I wanted to spend just a couple minutes to talk about the holiday season that's coming up and a few tips in being smart energy consumers related specifically to decorating. And Grant has been working very diligently on putting together some of these social media tips and ideas. And Grant, do you want to feature some of the things that you have been finding in your research that could be beneficial to our listeners?
Yeah, for sure. So as Mary said, I have been doing some work, as long as Shelby has been helping me out, look up some different research in regards to kind of different holiday alternatives related to energy or just holiday decorations in general. So a lot of the things we are finding are switched to LEDs. I cannot emphasize that enough. So LEDs have been seen to be more efficient, more sustainable, cheaper in relation to incandescent in the long run, and you can connect a ton of strings together compared to just those incandescent lights. And then if for those who are not going to dress up their house or not put a bunch of lights up, there are a lot of alternatives of different ornaments, tinsel, and different hanging of a lot of different things that you can just spruce up the holiday season that way instead of just traditional lights. And then another big thing is that smart timers are a great way to help save on your electricity bill by kind of just reducing how long these lights are on. And you can just sort of preset a time where you can have them on and then have them shut off so they just aren't on all winter long. And then remember to take those lights down at the end so they aren't up and running all year round. So those are the main tips and tricks that we have for listeners.
Good advice.
Yeah, and I would note I loved some of the different ideas that Grant and Shelby found as far as decorations that don't have to plug in. And so the tinsel reflects a lot of light. And so it's almost as if they are lit up, you know, those tinsel garlands. And then also flameless candles. I've seen a lot of those around, and those are so pretty without, of course, the danger concerns of having those candles on. And yes, those timers. If you really are a traditionalist and you do not like LEDs, then putting lights on timers can be incredibly efficient. And taking the lights down, because that is a huge economic savings if you're not leaving your lights up and they're weathering and not going to last from year to year.
Oh, great.
Fantastic. So, yeah.
Great things to weave into our holiday spirit.
Most definitely. And so, see, Shelby, one more reminder how folks can learn more about the Smart Business Challenge and stay tuned for more information about our upcoming luncheon events.
Yeah, if everyone would like to learn any more information, go to cityofames.com/smartenergy. We have a bunch of stuff there about the Smart Business Challenge, ways you can make your home more energy efficient, rebates for energy efficient appliances. I wholeheartedly recommend that. And again, please keep an eye out on the city social media for any news and updates on our luncheon. We hope to see many local businesses there and teach you really just what the climate action plan and how it will affect you.
I have to. This is Mike Metz, Shelby, and I have to say, when you were talking about energy efficiency in your homes, being from Spring Green, you're probably familiar with Taliesin and an architect, a famous architect who built energy efficiency into his homes there. Do we know?
Yes, I am. I'm actually just down the street from that. It's always been amazing to view it and kind of see the differences in architecture there.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. Oh, this is great. Thanks for creating quite a holiday spirit buzz for how to be sustainable. Thank you, Mary Rankin, Sustainability Director for the City of Ames and Iowa State University. Shelby Nekesh and Grant Burrish, hope to have you again on Local Talk.
Pat will definitely come back and keep you updated.
Thank you so much. Let's welcome Catherine McKenzie, Story County, Iowa State University Extension and Outreach Coordinator. Hi, Catherine.
Hey, how are you?
Oh, we're good today. That was quite a segment on sustainable holiday ideas. And
yeah.
I'm sure ISU Extension has a lot planned for the coming weeks and into the new year.
Yes, so I really loved what Mary had to say about being a little bit more eco-friendly and cautious. Mm-hmm. Coming up in the spring, Story County is going to have Master Conservationists, and that'll be just a little bit more of what you can do within your home to support, like, native plants and the native wildlife and native insect populations and stuff like that, and just to be a little bit more sustainable, just in your home.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was thinking that was really cool to see it at a big, huge level. But personally, you can learn a lot in the spring. Registration is not open yet, but I feel like once that is open, it is going to go fast. We want it to have a smaller class size so everybody can really learn. But
so this is something we can kind of remind our listeners throughout the winter, your bi-monthly segment.
Yes, sir. Yeah. Also, another thing that we can always remind our listeners is about our Master Gardener classes.
Yeah.
We'll be hosting that in the fall. But Master Gardeners go through a little bit of training and education, and then they get to go out and get their hands dirty and volunteer all throughout the county, doing all different types of gardening projects and education projects. This past year, our 62 active Master Gardeners put in just over 3,200 hours of volunteer work.
Did you say 62?
Yes, sir.
62.
So those 62 people all together put in 3,200 hours.
Fantastic.
Yes, and within that, they've done little things like our Grow Together Iowa mini grant. The USDA gives us a little bit of money so that we can have a garden that supports a local food bank. And at ours here in Story County, we produce just under 2,000 pounds of fresh produce.
Mm-hmm.
Also, our volunteers did some garden work at the local hospice house, where they made a sensory garden and an edible garden so that patients can get out and see outside and breathe in some fresh air, but also be in a beautiful garden and eat some fresh produce as well.
Oh my goodness. Was that new this in 2022?
Yes, sir. Our master gardeners are absolutely amazing. They also put in lots of volunteer hours at Ryman Gardens and at the Iowa Arboretum.
Uh-huh. The Iowa Arboretum over by Luther, Iowa, kind of south of Boone. Uh-huh.
Yeah. But our master gardeners are amazing, and if people want to join that, that will start in the fall, and registration will open early July.
Okay.
So that's
keep that
a
in
ways
mind.
Out.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So are some of the master gardeners, they stay on, or have some been involved as master gardeners for decades?
Yes. We have some master gardeners that were part of the first group that were offered, I believe, back in 1986 or 7.
Oh,
that
my
was
gosh.
Before me. So I don't know what year.
Let's collaborate. And I'd like to hear some of those voices.
They are amazing. And the fact that they've been putting in volunteer hours for so, so long. They have such a deep passion for gardening and helping out. They are amazing.
Yeah, they're busy people, I'm sure. But maybe during this winter season, we could have them come on.
Yes, sir. Yeah, I could
Let's
definitely
think about
talk
that.
To some of them and get them. Yeah, that would be really cool. Mm-hmm. But so we're talking about things that are happening months from now. We also have a few things that are happening a bit sooner. we have Cultivating Hope Farms 4-H Club. Cultivating Hope is a group that allows kids that are on the autism spectrum to be able to join 4-H without all the crazy hecticness. We know that they need a little bit of a different education, and so we're offering that in a 4-H club form. That meeting will be held December 13th at 4 p.m. here at our extension office on South Bell Avenue.
So that's December 13th. I'll make sure that I get that in the paragraph describing this program. What time?
At 4 p.m.
4 p.m. Okay.
Yes, sir. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and also we're at kind of like our, it's the winter. Nobody wants to be outside, you know, so we're starting a lot of our planning for the spring. We've got so many cool opportunities that we've got in the works that I am just so excited to be here for the spring in the extension office.
Well, we really appreciate you coming on Local Talk and giving us these very timely and important updates. Yes, sir. You do just such great
work. We really
appreciate
the opportunity to come on and share all of our education opportunities.
Yeah. Is there anything else, Catherine?
I believe that is it for our little updates, but you can always check our Facebook page and our website, which is www.extension.iastate.edu/story.
Well, I really appreciate all your staff with the ISU Extension. They're on South Bell, and thanks for coming on and keeping us informed, and thanks for all the great work that you do. And I may not see you before the holidays, so Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays. And
you too, Pat. Okay. We'll see you later. Thank you so much for letting us on.
Thank you, Catherine McKenzie, ISU Extension Outreach Coordinator. Thanks for being on Local Talk.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Pat, yesterday we had an opportunity to join the OLLI group, the Osher Lifelong Learning at Iowa State University. Winter classes are coming up, and we here at KHOI are offering a two-part program to learn to become a radio program producer.
Reporter, whatever level. Right. We have a variety of tasks here at the community radio station. So come join the community, if you will.
Signing up for that class today, right after 8:30. I believe they say that they're going to open up the lines. You can do that online.
And quite a list of comprehensive OLLI classes beyond just what we're offering here at KHUI. But
sure, anything from, gosh, learning how to play a native flute to computer security, learn about food safety. There are a whole bunch of different
there are really things, so. Quite a variety of topics. I really enjoy learning. Everything I learn about Ollie classes is so positive. And I'm glad there's volunteers that are willing to step up and instruct. And it's going to be a great opportunity for us to expand.
Right. And kind of give people a taste of what goes on behind the scenes. And
yeah.
If they have any kind of an interest, or maybe we'll pique their interest and they can perhaps become part of our family.
We just want to share the love.
Okay. So, well, Local Talk airs each weekday at 7 a.m. on 89.1 FM. KHOI Local Talk is a training workshop as well as a show. And if you have an interest in joining the Local Talk team as a reporter, the welcome mat is out here at 622 Douglas Avenue. Please come join the Local Talk team by going to our website, where we are streaming live at khoifm.org. And please remember to support this nonprofit station financially when you go to that website, and you'll find the yellow donate button to push.
KHOI provides a platform for citizens and public officials to air opinions and information. The views of our guests do not necessarily reflect those of KHOI. KHOI is community nonprofit, nonpartisan media in the highest regard. At community radio, you're going to hear items and stories you're not going to hear anywhere else. So community radio is unique in that way. So thank you, Dennis Hart, with your Friday summary of the news. Thank you, Local Talk producer Lyd Carey. And thank you, Mike Murphy, for engineering and all that you do here at Community Radio. I love that you name it each Thursday at 2 p.m., which is rebroadcast Monday at 9 p.m. Quite a John Lennon program that'll be re-aired Monday at 9 p.m. Thanks to our guests today, Perry Little, Tribal Preservation Director for the Ahuntawan Nation, Mary Rankin, Energy Services, interns Shelby Nekish and Grant Burrish, and Catherine McKenzie with Story County ISU Extension. And thank you, co-host Mike Metz. I have been your other host, Pat Schlarbaum.
And our theme song, as always, is Backtrackin' by Tom Richards and Al Harris from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. The other artist you heard was Spirit Cry Thunder. Stay tuned for headline news and Democracy Now!, and Adagio follows at 9 a.m. Remember, you, the listeners, are what makes KHOI meaningful and possible. Thank you for listening, and thank you for supporting KHOI community, and we'll see you again on the radio.